Welcome to our discussion of Learning from History. I'm Joe Parker.
And I'm John Streeter.
Let's get started. Hey, John.
How's it going?
Oh, just peachy. How are you doing?
Good. Just peachy.
Yeah, especially after learning that everything we do is in a cycle. And there's not anything new at all.
That's true. History is predetermined.
Yeah.
It's all fate.
No. So what stage in this cycle are we in now? That would be my first question, based on your experience.
Yeah, I think we're in... I'm not going to say depending on how this election goes. I'm going to say depending on how certain trends in our society play out. We're in the rule of the many for the good of the many, moving towards rule of the many for the good of the one.
Okay.
I think there are groups on both the left and the right that seek to live at the expense of others. They're democratic in a sense that they still believe in popular government, but they want to oppress some in order to benefit others. That's moving from democracy to ochlocracy.
Is it possible to give examples without being political, or no?
I mean, you have white nationalists versus Antifa. I guess that would be my two examples. If you're asking from America today.
Yeah.
Yeah. White nationalists versus Antifa.
Okay. Do you have a feeling of which way it's going to go based on what you're seeing in the current climate?
No. It depends on, are we going to remain true to kind of the principles of the founding, where we have equal opportunity under the law, equal access to all of the rights and benefits of our society? Or are we going to say, you know, let's step away from that. Let's try something different. Let's embrace this revolutionary moment and see if we can adopt some form of mob rule or some form of tyranny.
Okay.
But as we talked about last week, all of my predictions for 2020 have been wrong so far. So if I predict one thing, the opposite's going to happen.
So can you predict the worst thing so the opposite happens?
Yeah, no kidding. So, no, because that'll be the one time when I'm right.
Yeah,
because
no,
this is 2020.
Yeah, that's very true. So when we think about the different ways that society could go, this type of cycle is widely known, or should be. I mean,
it should be. You're right.
So on that note, why don't more people see this pattern? Why has it not been discussed more? And if we see the pattern, is there a way that we can avoid specific outcomes?
Well, I mean, anytime you're looking at patterns, you have to be looking for them in order to find them. And a lot of people, especially now within the historical community, they reject the idea of patterns. They say that everything has to be new, everything's unique. There's no such thing as a cyclical view of history, or it's not the right way to look at history. And to an extent, I agree. You don't want to look for patterns where there are none, but as I described in the episode, this one's pretty clear that you do have this cycle of evolution, this anacyclosis. It's not well known, partially because Polybius and the Greeks are not necessarily taught anymore. So there's that. You have to basically be classically educated in order to get much of that. Most schools today, not a criticism, they just don't teach that. And as far as how to avoid it, well, that's going to depend individually based on the countries. I mean, like I said, right now, do we embrace the revolutionary moment, or do we say, no, let's stick with what has worked for 200 years, with the understanding that, yes, progress needs to be made and progress isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. In the podcast, you talked about the three different forms within the anacyclosis cycle, the rule by one, the rule by a few, and the rule by many.
Right.
Is there, of those three, one that's worse than the other? Or is there one that stands out as a better option in the history of the world?
I would say in and of themselves, not necessarily. It's more about the goals, because you've got the one, the few, and the many, and then you have ruling for the good of the one or the good of the many. Rule by any of the different types, one, few, or many, is infinitely better if the goal is the good of the many. Meaning, are we living in a true constitutional monarchy like in the United Kingdom? That's better, even though it's technically rule by one. Queen Elizabeth has the theoretical power to do just about anything. She chooses not to because of Parliament and the British Constitution. That's better than mob rule, where it's rule by the many for the good of the one. So democracy is not inherently better than monarchy or aristocracy. It's about what people do with the power that they have in government. Now, am I saying that I think America should become a monarchy or an aristocracy? No, I think rule by the many for the good of the many is the best of the six. But you asked, you know, one, few, or many, which one's better? You have to incorporate in that second bit, who are we trying to benefit? Are we trying to benefit ourselves, those in power, or are we looking to benefit the people as a whole?
Do you think that when we think about benefiting the people as a whole, that that's achieved through the first two, so rule...
Oh, no, it's best achieved by the rule of the many. It's best achieved through popular government.
Okay.
That's certainly true. But it is possible in an aristocracy or in a monarchy. It's just not easy, and they usually don't last very long.
Yeah. So I think I know the answer to this question, but what compelled you to pick this topic? When we were thinking through the podcast for season 4, what was something about this concept that caught your attention?
A couple things. I mean, we're generally speaking, like last season, progressing sequentially. So we start with ancient history and then moving forward. So it was an ancient topic. It deals with Greek political thought, a little bit of Greek philosophy, which I like. And then, of course, I mean, there's the moment that we're in right now, not just in the United States, but in a lot of Western countries where we have these potential revolutionary moments popping up here and there. You have groups who are some with legitimate grievances and some not, saying we want change, we want change. And then looking at what Polybius wrote 2,400 years ago and saying, oh man, some of the stuff that they're talking about fits exactly in that last category, that ochlocracy, this mob rule. Mm-hmm. And that is incredibly dangerous because, as we're going to talk about later this season, when we get to the French Revolution, we're going to do a couple episodes on that, seeing what the Jacobins did, which is what they're pushing. These Antifa activists, certain elements within the BLM movement, are pushing for a radical egalitarian democracy. And what that does without any kind of protections for any minority, majority group, whoever it is, their fate is not going to be a pleasant one. You look to history, you learn the lessons from history so you can avoid it, but they're looking to history as a how-to book, trying to follow those same steps.
So they've openly stated that they're seeing the Jacobins as an example.
No, they're not, but their rhetoric is almost identical to Robespierre. Robespierre famously said, we want liberty, equality, brotherhood, or death. And a lot of these activists are saying, not in the exact same words, but the same mentality of give us what we want or else.
How does one decipher between groups that, let's say someone sees a Confederate statue and they're displeased with the history that it commemorates or the person who's being highlighted, they see it as honoring them. How does someone see someone and says, hey, that offends me, it should come down, versus who you're talking about?
I'm not sure if I understand what you mean.
In terms of the Jacobins wanted to erase all of history in France and start over. I believe you that mm-hmm. there's some people who definitely want that here. They believe all of our past is bad and they want it all gone. But how do we separate those extremists from people who say this is a statue or this is a period in history or a group of people that we should not honor with specific statues or titles and so on?
I think when you're talking specifically the statues, you have to distinguish between one thing that a person did versus everything that they did. And hopefully everyone will let me say this whole thing before you shut the podcast off. You take the classic example, George Washington. George Washington owned other human beings. That was reprehensible. You will never, ever in a classroom, on this podcast, if you meet me on the streets, hear me say that what he did was a good thing. Mm-hmm. But that has to be counterbalanced, not in terms of making that less evil, but also recognizing the good that he did. Without George Washington, there would not be an America. We talked about that a couple years ago on this podcast. So do you want to take down that statue and replace it with something that shows the proper context or something like that? Or do you want to have a plaque? Let's move it to a museum or something like that. Or is it simply, we have to cancel George Washington? I mean, another great example, Susan B. Anthony. We're recording this in late August of 2020. And I think it was earlier this week, the president said he's going to pardon Susan B. Anthony. 2 days before that, there was an article on Now This, which is a fairly left-wing political commentary site, praising Susan B. Anthony as the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment approached. As soon as Donald Trump said something nice about Susan B. Anthony, Now This, 2 hours later, posts a video about how Susan B. Anthony needs to be canceled because she had said some racist things. And she had, and that's reprehensible. Again, not going to defend that. Do we let the mistakes that people make completely overshadow the good that they've done, and so we have to cancel them, remove them from society? I liken that. A student asked me about this last week as we started school. He said, what do you think about all these statues the erasure of history? I said, it's one thing to learn from history versus ignore it. What the Jacobins did, what some people today are doing, not everyone, I'm not tarring everyone in the BLM movement or the Antifa movement or anyone on the left who's rightly concerned about American history. But what some people want to do by saying, don't teach this stuff, cancel everybody, cancel everything. Imagine going to bed each night, and when you wake up in the morning, you don't remember anything that you did the previous day. Imagine living your life that way. You would have no context for how you're going to live, how you're going to go through your day. You wouldn't have any memory of what you did the previous day. And the student was like, oh, wow, that'd be kind of nice. I was like, yeah. You fail a test, you don't remember it the next day. You say something stupid and you get into a fight with a girlfriend, all right, that's fine. But you also don't know how to feed yourself. You don't know not to touch the stove when it's hot. You can't learn from your history. You can't progress as a society unless you know, have a context of what you did in the past. And without that, what do we do as children, as toddlers, when we don't remember what happened the previous day? Our parents are the ones who tell us, this is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to behave. Who's the parent in that society that some of these people want to build? It's them. Whether it's government or religious institutions or whatever, telling us this is what you need to do. We're going to hide your history so you can't make your own decisions. We're going to decide for you. That is incredibly dangerous. And it pushes this idea of mob rule, of autocracy, and of the other two kind of lesser forms of government, a tyranny and an oligarchy. It's made easier when you don't learn your lessons from history.
So a distinction that people can make is when someone says, I want to tear this down, whatever, it's a statue or a plaque or something, or they're protesting something, like they want to erase it, not call it into question and say, hey, there's some things that we should be aware of.
Put it in its context. Yeah.
Right, right.
Exactly.
So someone who wants to erase something, that's the red flag, not someone. Okay.
Correct.
So if there's questioning history and then there's canceling history.
Exactly. We talked about, I think it was last season, when we talked about Christopher Columbus. Most kids, they learn the rhyme, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. All right. Teach that to little kids. But then when you get to high school and college and things like that, also teach the horrible stuff.
Yeah.
Don't make Columbus out to be this wonderful human being, because he wasn't. What he did was important, and we should learn about that. Don't simply say, we're not going to talk about Christopher Columbus.
Yeah.
Substitute that for any character in or any person in history.
Yeah, that particular podcast was pretty hard to write because I had, you know, I feel the same way. He was not the best person in the world, and I'm not a fan of his. But to your point, his achievements are important.
Right.
But he is a man, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Back to the three forms that you talked about in the podcast, the rule of one, the rule of a few, and the rule by many. Can any of those exist at the same time? So when we think about a tyrant, there's a lot of times when he has what we would consider an inner circle or a group of people who are her higher up versus the commoner. Can those exist at the same time? And can you share examples of that?
It's tough to have a real tyranny nowadays where it's really just one person. Even in, you think of places like North Korea, it really isn't Kim Jong-un or his sister, depending on, you know, I saw a news story today that he might not be around anymore, but it's rarely the great leader.
Again?
Yeah, again, yeah. Most modern dictatorships, most basically post-industrial dictatorships, about from Napoleon going forward, are going to be, technically speaking, by Polybius's definition, they're going to be an oligarchy, where it's ruled by like one party. In Nazi Germany, Hitler and his entourage. Really, tyrannies, you're going back to ancient Greece and even earlier to ancient civilizations where it was like one city and you could have one person who is in charge making all of the decisions.
Okay.
Did I miss something?
Yeah. So talked through the
examples.
Tyrannies. Yeah. Is it possible for these three things to exist in some form at the same time?
Using Polybius's grid, no. You either have rule of one or few or many. But the label tyrant or the label dictator can be applied whether we're talking about one, few, or many. So you have to distinguish between Polybius's terminology and kind of the modern definition, because a modern tyranny would be a place like Nazi Germany, whereas Polybius would say, no, that's not a tyranny, that's an oligarchy. So it's really a semantic difference. But if we're just looking at Polybius's grid, which is not, you know, it's not the Bible, it's not inspired, it's not the only way to look at politics, it's just kind of an interesting way. But no, it's you're in one or the other.
Okay.
Or one of the six spots.
Would you say on that note that Polybius's model is accurate as he described it, or has it evolved to something else now?
No, I think it's pretty comprehensive. It's hard to think of another form of government, just again, because he was simple.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like the forms specifically, but more the cycle itself.
The cycle, I don't think is 100% accurate. I mean, as I mentioned, you have countries that jump all over that cycle. He was pretty clear based on the history that he had experienced and what he had read, specifically in the Greek city states. Most of the Greek city states went through that same cycle in roughly the same way. But as technology evolves, as cities and become countries and politics becomes more complex, you're now going to have France over the course of 15 years bounced across, I think, like four of the six spots in the grid. So I don't think his specific definition of it as a cycle where you're going to progress inevitably from monarchy to tyranny to aristocracy to oligarchy to democracy to autocracy. That's not always going to happen.
When we think about the cycle itself, I was trying to find kind of a commonality in the cycles in history to try and find what's the catalyst that is really that push past each point. So one of the things I came up with, and feel free to say I'm completely wrong, but is information. You learn about who's in power and who's not. You learn about the actions that they're taking. Then you make your own choices based on what you know. Is this right and is this wrong? And based on that, this person either has our actual interests in mind or they have their own. Mm-hmm. And over time, people get ticked off if they only have their own in mind.
I think that's probably part of it.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say, because we're literally talking about hundreds of thousands of different regimes over the course of 2,400 years, I'm not going to say, here's the category. I think information is part of it. Part of it is simply people being fed up with oppression. When you have rule by anyone for the good of the one, they're going to get sick of it at some point.
Sure.
You're going to push a population, because we all have this innate desire for liberty, you're going to push people too far and they're going to rise up and snap back and all of that.
My reason for asking it in just that way is right now, we have access to all information.
Yes.
I mean, we can look at anything we want, whether it's right or wrong. That's always a challenge. But in that vein, does the cycle increase at this point because we have access to everything? I mean, as long as we live here and Google hasn't said you can't access certain pieces of information.
Joe, would Google ever do that?
Well, it depends. Am I in China or not?
Yeah.
My point is since we have access to so much information now, does that speed up the cycle of change?
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. Because we're also more distracted than ever before.
Ah, touche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can learn about what's going on in Washington, or I can watch Ben Shapiro review Cardi B's latest song, and that's way,
that's a good review.
Way more entertaining.
That was a good review.
Yeah. I can read Trump's Twitter, or I can...
People got mad at him for that.
Oh, I know.
They were really upset. Yeah. It's like, somehow this disturbs him. Like, well, yeah.
Anyway, we love you, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do.
Please let us on your podcast.
Please have
someday.
Us over.
But no, you can... All the information we have, we can literally just spend the day surfing Netflix and watching Tiger King instead of actually being aware of what's going on in our society. And that's not a criticism. I mean, it's amazing that we have that ability, but it also makes for a more distracted population than I think has ever been possible in human history.
It's interesting to compare the information that we have access to versus the information we choose to access.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, why? I mean, even me, like speaking personally, why do I want to see a fail video on YouTube? Versus,
because they're hilarious.
Well, true.
Yeah.
But I mean, shouldn't I be more concerned about some of the events happening? And I am. I mean, I'm going to do everything I can do to help. But I think part of it is you learn so much and you have access to so much. It's like, what do I do with this now?
And it's exhausting.
Yeah. When we're thinking through these three different stages, the forms of government that he talks about and that you spoke to, those are intellectual constructs, right? Like we see them as someone, like somebody sees themselves as like, I'm going to take control of a specific area, or a group says, I want to maintain control over an area, or a group of people within that area eventually say, we're going to determine that on our own.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why when we look at history, the smaller groups somehow change history for an entire like large group? In our society right now, the narrative of the few and the loudest is the one that's being promoted versus the people who just go to work every day, who just want to go home to their families. And somehow policy is being dictated by these small groups. So that's...
I think that's always been the case.
Well, that's kind of my point. So how do we break out of that? How does the larger group say enough?
You're assuming that we want to break out of that. I mean, there's an argument to be made that, hey, those people are willing, they should be heard because they're willing to spend the time to try and promote social change. I mean, the founding fathers, they were a minority. They didn't have mass public support at the beginning of the American Revolution. Now, they didn't have Twitter and anything like that, but the Committees of Correspondence, Sons of Liberty, all the other organizations that supported the founding fathers, they were a minority as well. So it comes to... Eventually, the public is going to have to make a decision. Do we like what they're saying or do we not like what they're saying? Right now, policy is being made because so many people are just kind of like, whatever. But here in the United States, at least, every 2 years, and especially every 4 years, we have a chance to vote and say, all right, either knock it off or we approve. And we'll find out in a little less than 3 months, 2 months. Oh my gosh, we're getting close. We have the ability to ultimately tell these people, yes, we're going to support your policies. No, we're not. Now, they'll continue.
Well, that's kind of my challenge is 4 years ago, Donald Trump was added into office and then like the protests continued. I mean, about everything.
Let them do that.
So my point is, I guess, is we voted and yet these people still have influence over policy.
Right, because they're taking the time and doing the work.
Okay. So you're saying that we need to take equal time in order to...
Yes, absolutely. Okay. You don't have to have mass public support, Donald Trump proved this, in order to get stuff done. You don't need to have a majority. These decisions are made by people who show up. And right now, only one side is on the field. Mm. The other side is cowering in their homes because of COVID, or they're saying, oh, I'll let somebody else do it.
Or they're afraid to speak up because of how they'll be perceived.
And that was my very next point. Or they are afraid of this cancel culture, which brings us back to kind of one of the first things that we were talking about. The fact that cancel culture will come for anyone, they will look into your personal past, is just another reflection of this tyranny of... Really, it's not a majority, it's a minority, trying to silence anyone who disagrees rather than having the conversation, engaging in debate. No, you said something very bad, you tweeted something very bad, or simply because of your gender or because of your race, you are bad. And for that reason, you need to be canceled. You need to be quiet and let us talk now. It's not just about national history or political or social history, it's also personal history. This idea of cancel culture is so toxic. Because not only can we as a society not learn from our mistakes, we as people are always going to be judged by one thing that we did in the past. There's no concept of growth, no concept of forgiveness made possible by the internet. And the fact that if I tweet something stupid or I post something stupid on Facebook, for all time, if someone has a screenshot of that, I'm a racist, I'm a sexist, I'm a bigot.
Yeah.
Just like Thomas Jefferson, he owned slaves, nothing else he did matters.
Yeah. It's the understanding that culture will... try that tactic, and it has to be ours to say, no, I'm not going to take part in that. If you want to do that, you do that, but I'm not going to be a part of it.
But we're afraid.
Yeah. So, final question for you. How do we truly engage in the cycle that we find ourselves in, and how do we manage it?
Be aware and get involved. I mean, we live in a society where you have the right to vote, and it's important that you go out in person, wear a mask, socially distance, etc., and go vote. Mm. Because for the vast majority of human history, those people did not have the right to vote. They could not participate in the democratic process, in the governing process. So the cycle kind of just swept them up. We literally have, as a collective, our fate in our hands. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to vote one way. Some are going to vote the other way. We'll see if which way the majority goes.
Yeah. So you're saying that voting is the primary way now in our current stage.
Yeah. And standing up and... I mean, to an extent, being proud of the history that we have and being willing to stand up and defend it. I mean, we've talked about cancel culture a couple times here, not being afraid of cancel culture, but I get, well, I'll lose my job or something like that. And I don't want to minimize that. But the reality is, if we want to preserve individually and culturally our history and our ability to learn from our mistakes, we have to be willing to talk about them. And our society right now says, no, you can't talk about it. You have to let me condemn you, let the social majority, they're not an actual majority, but a majority of people who are talking about this, let us condemn you, let us say, call you racist, sexist, et cetera, et cetera. It's your turn to be quiet now. We have to stand up and say, no, that's not how this is going to happen. There are probably going to be consequences, but what's the alternative? Because at some point, every society is going to get to that mob rule bit, and if you're not a part of that mob, you're going to suffer consequences. The goal should be, let's stop this. Let's say, no, our history is worth preserving. Our mistakes are worth learning from. We need to accept that, you know, there's good and bad in our past, and we need to talk about it rather than just saying, nope, anyone who has said or done anything bad, they're canceled, they're out of society. We're not going to listen to them ever.
Thank you for joining us in our discussion of Learning from History. I'm Joe Parker.
And I'm John Streeter.
Be sure to leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. It really does help. Thanks, and see you all next week.